The official death toll stands at 9. Rescue officials now say more than 300 people are missing in the collapse of a mining dam which sent rivers of mud through a community in southeastern Brazil. Officials say scores of people are known to be trapped in areas inundated by sludge near the town of Brumadinho. The dam is administered by Brazil's giant mining company, Vale. 200 of the missing are said to be Vale employees who were having lunch in the dam's administrative area when the collapse occurred. There was good news overnight for 800,000 U.S. government workers affected by the longest federal shutdown in U.S. history, 35 days. The Office of Management and Budget sent a memo late Friday to government departments and agencies informing them their employees could return to work. The shutdown was over. A lot of those returning workers have bitter feelings over what they have had to endure over the past 5 weeks. Susan Braverman is with the TSA. She has money issues.
And we don't know exactly when our paychecks are going to catch up. And then having another 3 weeks where we're worried about being in the same situation we're in now, it's demoralizing, it's unfair, it's cruel.
Braverman's TSA colleague, Kyra Dalmeida, voiced her opinion.
They're going to try to do in 3 weeks what they can do in 5 weeks. So any one of us that ask her, what do you think is going to happen? They're going to shut down the government again. That's what we all think. They're going to do it again. And all because what? A vanity wall?
A House Senate conference is charged with finding a way to prevent another shutdown by coming up with a permanent budget deal that President Trump will sign. Yellow vest protesters are in the streets of Paris and other French cities for the 11th straight weekend, and again demonstrators are aiming their wrath at French President Emmanuel Macron and policies which they insist favor the rich. This is VOA News. Greek lawmakers have narrowly ratified a deal with Macedonia, ending a nearly three-decade-long dispute. Anna Bevan of Reuters has a report.
The historic vote ends a decades-old dispute between the two countries and paves the way for the tiny Balkan state to be considered for EU and NATO membership. On Thursday, demonstrators hurled petrol bombs, flares and firecrackers at police guarding the parliament. They responded with tear gas and took several of the protesters into custody. The settlement seeks to end a 28-year-old row between Athens and Skopje over the use of the term Macedonia. Greece has a province called Macedonia and has long demanded the country change its name. But Greeks fear the agreement could lead to territorial claims against Greece and say it's an attempt to appropriate Greece's ancient cultural heritage. Macedonia has already ratified the deal.
That was Anna Bevan of Reuters. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo welcomed the ratification and praised the Greek government for what he termed his vision, courage, and persistence in pushing ahead with the agreement. Sources tell VOA, the United States and the Taliban may have agreed on a plan for American troops to leave Afghanistan. As part of the deal, we are told, the insurgent group is given assurances that no international terrorist groups would be allowed to use Afghan soil to launch attacks against any country. The reported understanding comes after nearly a week of intense dialogue in Qatar. The U.S. drawdown would require the Taliban to observe a ceasefire, but both the withdrawal and the ceasefire would be limited and conditional. VOA sources say they expect the two sides to announce the tentative agreement sometime in the next few days. U.S. military forces have been fighting in Afghanistan for 17 years. Five people were killed when a helicopter and a small tourist airplane collided near the border between France and Italy. Italy's Mountains Rescue Service says it found two people injured at the crash site and they were evacuated. Officials say the helicopter was carrying skiers to a glacier in the northwestern Italian region of Val d'Aosta when it collided with a tourist aircraft on Friday. The identities and nationalities of the victims have not been released. The United Nations says two of its peacekeepers from Sri Lanka were killed when their convoy hit a landmine in the West African nation of Mali. A spokesman for Secretary General Antonio Guterres said six other Sri Lankan peacekeepers were injured in Friday's blast, which took place in Mali's central Mopti region. The UN says a peacekeeper from Burkina Faso was injured by an improvised explosive device in the same area on Thursday. No one has claimed responsibility for either incident. Secretary General Guterres says targeting UN peacekeepers may constitute war crimes. Gene Randall, VOA News.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington.
This is an unacceptable action by the executive arm of the federal government. It is an action that actually destroys the attempt to destroy the rule of law in Nigeria, and we call on the government to reverse this action.
The Nigerian Bar Association condemns President Muhammadu Buhari over what it says is a judicial coup following the suspension of the Chief Justice.
The new president, who has reminded the people that he hasn't been elected just for one try, but he insisted that he is and remains the president of all the Congolese and all the people living here in the Democratic Republic of Congo.
The Democratic Republic of Congo's new president, Felix Tshisekedi, calls for unity shortly after his official installation.
I'm a Rastafarian. We have never been ruled by a Rastafarian in my life. People know that a Rastafarian is a peaceful man. I can't kill. I don't eat flesh. My hands are free. I scream. All those who are comparing me with, they're not like me. I was not born in 1993.
And a Malawian presidential candidate says discrimination against Rastafarians is one of the reasons why he seeks to become the next president. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari has sworn in Ibrahim Tanko Mohammed as the new acting Chief Justice after suspending Justice Walter Onogen. The president cited the ongoing trial of Onogen by the Code of Conduct Tribunal as the reason behind the suspension. But opposition parties have condemned the suspension weeks before the upcoming February elections. The Nigerian Bar Association also rejected the suspension, describing it as an attempted coup against the judiciary, which it says amount to the interruption of the constitution. It also called on the government to avert what it says is the looming constitutional crisis. For more reaction, I reach Paul Usoro, president of the Nigerian Bar Association.
Well, we actually have issued a statement. We consider it to be a coup against the judiciary, and we have called on the federal government to reverse that position immediately.
But so far, has the government adhered to your urging not to go ahead with those plans?
We haven't heard anything. The statement was issued last night. If government is going to do anything, we expect we should hear it over the weekend, maybe by Monday.
So what will the Nigeria Bar Association do in this instance? Because supporters of the president are saying he has the prerogative, the constitution empowers him to take such actions if he is displeased with what the Chief Justice is doing.
Well, it's not you have used a very interesting word. You said if he's displeased. It's not in the position of the president to take actions based on his pleasure, whether he's pleased or he's not pleased with what the CJN is doing. There is a process that the law stipulates, and all that the Nigerian Bar Association is saying is that that process should be followed.
Is the government not following those processes that you stipulated at the moment?
That is precisely what the Nigerian Bar Association has stated, that that process has not been followed.
Well, some are worried that this has political implications and could possibly undermine the integrity of the upcoming elections. What is the stance of the Nigeria Bar Association on this?
Well, the Nigerian Bar Association, again, we look beyond election. We are saying rule of law has to be upheld, and that part of the rule of law is that due process should be followed. And this goes beyond the election. It's a principle that is immutable and it is standard for all citizens. So we are insisting that that process, if the executive has something against the Chief Justice, let them follow that proper process that is stipulated by law and get to its conclusion. And that is how to uphold the rule of law.
Will the Nigeria Bar Association seek a court challenge to this directive by the government if the due processes as stipulated by law are not followed as currently is being witnessed by Nigerians?
The Nigerian Bar Association will be holding its National Executive Committee meeting, and I would not want to preempt what that final decision making body would decide. By Monday, it will declare exactly the steps that the Nigerian Bar Association will be taking.
So what will the Nigerian Bar Association want the people of Nigeria to know in the face of this decision taken by the administration?
What they would want is exactly what is contained in the statement that was issued by the association yesterday, and which is to the fact that this is an unacceptable action by the executive arm of the federal government. It is an action that actually it attempts to destroy the rule of law in Nigeria, and we call on the government to reverse those actions. And that is the message we have sent to the people of Nigeria, and the message we have sent to the executive arm of government. And we're expecting that they should be able to listen and do the right thing.
Paul Osuro is the president of the Nigerian Bar Association. He spoke with me from the capital, Abuja. Meanwhile, the Nigerian Independent National Electoral Commission, or INEC, says it is working with security agencies to ensure the upcoming elections are devoid of violence. The electoral body also says it will continue to work with political parties and other stakeholders to address the concerns before the elections. INEC's pronouncement came after rejecting a decision by Obiageli Ezekwesili to withdraw from the presidential election. The electoral body said the law prevents a candidate from withdrawing weeks before the elections. For the latest development about the preparation for the upcoming February 16 general election, I reach Aliyu Bello, spokesman for the Nigerian Electoral Commission.
One can say for a fact that the commission is ready for the 2019 general election.
How about the issue with security? Because there have been growing insecurity in parts of the country. Will that affect the election, and how are you cooperating with the police or security agencies to ensure the election is devoid of violence before, during, and after the election?
The commission, that is Independent National Electoral Commission, is working very closely with all security agencies, and there have been adequate security mapping and strategizing to ensure that every voter, every aspect of the process exercise his franchise or exercise is conducted most peacefully and in a manner, in such a way that nobody will have any security challenge. In fact, very recently, 2 days ago, the commission met with leaders, with heads of all security agencies. It has been a regular feature, a quarterly meeting, for commission to discuss with security agencies and identify all hotspots to ensure that adequate provision is made to guarantee safety of life and property.
How about meeting political parties and stakeholders and addressing their concerns before the election?
Well, the political parties have always been part of the process, and on every stage of the process, they have access to all information, and the commission engages with them on quarterly basis and on special occasions to brief them on, to update them, to give them updates on preparations and key activities of the commission.
Transparency International Nigeria has said the Trader Money Scheme, a collateral free loan initiative targeted at petty traders and artisans as part of the country's National Social Investment Program of the federal government, is a form of voter inducement. This is a concern that has been raised by Transparency International in Nigeria. How is the commission addressing this particular issue?
I think looking most closely at the schedule of commission and activities of commission, the main duty of the commission is to provide a level playing ground to all participants in the process. I mean political parties, candidates, and voters. So the commission has been working towards that target of providing a level playing ground. So it is not for the commission to comment further on some of the issues raised by the Transparency International. They may have their own understanding of the issues, but for commission, that is INEC, its own main duty is to conduct election in a free, fair, and most transparent manner.
One of the presidential candidates, Obi Ezekwesili, decided that she might not necessarily contest the upcoming presidential election. What has INEC done about it?
Well, it's her right to either contest or to withdraw, but the law provides that any person wishing to withdraw from the race would have done so at least 45 days to the polls. So if she decided to withdraw, that is her own right. But as far as the law is concerned, she remained a candidate even after withdrawal.
Why is it that her name will still be on the ballot after announcing to the entire world and Nigerians that she will not be contesting the elections?
The law provides a certain timeline for withdrawal, and that timeline has lapsed. She ought to have done so earlier than now. In fact, any person, any candidate now that withdraw, his party remains on the processes, and what's received by that party is counted in favor of that party. So her decision to withdraw does not actually change the position of the law. The law allows commission to continue to recognize that there was a candidate sponsored in this party by so-so-so nomenclature. It's not for commission to now say, having withdrawn from the race, so we will now accept her withdrawal. Her withdrawal is personal to her, but the law recognizes that there has to be a timeline within which to withdraw, and she has not withdrawn within that time frame.
Aliyu Bello is the spokesman for the Nigerian Electoral Commission. He spoke with me from the capital, Abuja. The new Democratic Republic of Congo President Felix Tshisekedi has called for the country's unity shortly after his official installation. It is the first time in the country's history for a democratically elected leader to peacefully hand over to another in a smooth transfer of power. For the latest development, I read Jean-Noël Bamwezi, an independent journalist in the Congolese capital, Kinshasa.
The mood generally is normal. People are still really busy celebrating because, you know, most of people, they need to hear it was just a change. And now they are like satisfied to see that the power has gone from the presidential majority to the opposition. And most of people are not supporting the position of Martin Fayulu. What most of people here can't understand is that they wanted power to go to the opposition. And now power has gone to the opposition. Even if it has gone to Felix Tshisekedi and not to Fayulu, but it's the opposition. So most of people here are busy condemning the reaction of Martin Fayulu.
The president, when he was inaugurated officially, called for unity. What has been the response of supporters of Martin Fayulu, particularly when they challenged his election victory in court?
He called indeed on unity. This followed the situation that's not very good between people of his tribe called Baluba and people of Martin Fayulu's tribe that's called Bakongo. Both tribes, they are looking at each other as enemies. Those from Martin Fayulu's tribe believed Martin Fayulu should be the winner, as he still claims up to now. And of course, he's supported by the Catholic Church, the Association of Catholic Bishops. These bishops continue to support him. It's like something giving more support to people from Martin Fayulu's tribe. So this is not well appreciated by the new president, who has reminded the people that he hasn't been elected just for one tribe, but he emphasizes that he is and remain the president of all the Congolese and all the people living here in the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Some people are expressing concern that it looks like President Kabila will remote control or try to control the new president. How are Congolese reacting to this?
Yeah, you know, President Joseph Kabila's political platform, the Common Front for Congo, well known as FCC, is the one keeping the parliamentarian majority. So somebody having more than 330 in the National Assembly, there's somebody having something like 50, you know, the difference is, the gap is very deep. Remember, President Kabila himself, according to this country's constitution, will remain a senator for life. And he's more likely to become the president of the Senate. So being the president of the Senate and having the majority of MPs in the National Assembly, and of course he will be the one having the majority in the Senate, it's true that he will have to control the government, because what's expected is that the majority of members of the upcoming government will be from Kabila's political platform, the FCC. So he's more likely to really control the regime.
So what is the expectation of Congolese now that for the first time in the country's history, they have one democratically elected leader handing over peacefully in a smooth transition to the next one in the name of President Felix Tshisekedi?
What people wanted here in the Democratic Republic of Congo is change. Most of the people I have spoken to here, what they are emphasizing is that they are supporting the new president, although they know there are so many challenges. But what they expect from him is, first of all, to try and not even to try, because they are not thinking about the trying, but they are thinking the new president has to improve the social conditions of people here. You know, most of people here are living poor life, although the Democratic Republic of Congo is among the richest countries. But the way people live here, you can't really believe. There are so many people who are poor and more poor than the poorest of the world, you know. That's why people, the major expectation of people for the president is, first of all, the social conditions of inhabitants of the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Jean-Noel Bamweze is an independent journalist in the DRC. He spoke with me from the capital, Kinshasa. The Ugandan ruling party, the National Resistance Movement, or NRM, is celebrating 33 years since taking power in 1986. 33 years ago, the National Resistance Army, or NRM, captured power after a five-year guerrilla war. George Wilson Kanyemba is a retired Supreme Court judge. He was one of the three Supreme Court justices who once ruled that the election of President Yoweri Kaguta Museveni was fraudulent enough to be nullified. My colleague Douglas Impuga reached him in the Ugandan capital Kampala for a comment on NRM's 33 years in power.
I think that its leadership has overstayed in power. And many times I have commented on this matter. And many, many people, I think the majority, would like to see change over the way we are governed and led in this country.
Yes, Professor, you were part of this NRM in the beginning. Where do you think NRM has gone wrong?
First of all, when this NRM came in first, we gave ourselves only 4 years. So that we have free and fair elections to hand the power to a democratically elected power. Then actually I was responsible because 4 years after so much chaos was too short. So we decided to extend only one term, 5 years. I was then the Minister of Justice and Attorney General. That was in 1989. And we convinced the then legislature and the most of the country that we needed a grace of another 5 years to complete the work we had. The country was grateful. They accepted our reasoning and they gave us only 5 years. Then we decided to make a new constitution. I was the chairman of the Legal and Drafting Committee of the Constituent Assembly, which made that constitution. So there was unanimity in the country that we wanted limited government, that every 5 years there should be elections for parliament, but there should be separate election for the president. And that the president should stay in the power only 2 terms, 5 years each. So we decided no individual can stay in power for more than 10 years. The president was to retire after clocking 75 years old. Then, lo and behold, 2001, the NRM changed its color. They convinced the president, or he convinced them, that give me one more term. I have not finished my program. He begged the country, and we all agree it is only one term, and he's been doing very, very well. Let's make an exception so that he has got another 5 years, and that's the end of the matter. We shall have another president. In fact, some people like Chiza Besigye and others didn't even accept that. He said, no, we must stick to our constitution. It's only 2 terms. That's why he stood against him, and he was supported by many Ugandans. Then from then on, rigging started taking place. Lo and behold, in 2005, the NRM caucus, sitting alone, secretly decided to change the constitution. And they removed term limits. So ever since then, elections, whether they are presidential, parliamentary, or local, have been voters compromised, promised jobs, promised seats in the parliament.
Nearly 80% of Ugandans were either not yet born or were very young when NRM took power. What do you see the future of NRM? Do you see any hope of a peaceful change of power? Because the president himself doesn't seem to be willing to relinquish power anytime soon.
Can I ask you a question? Was the change in South Africa, was the people who had apartheid, were they willing? Was the recent change in Zimbabwe, even South Africa, Zuma, were they willing leadership? Were the leaders in Libya willing? Were the leaders recently, or rather, previously in Tunisia, where the president had won 99%, where the leaders in Iraq winning people's power, you take the power. The leaders, no leader I know of, ever willing wants to hand over power. But the Ugandan people must be wise and say, our country has been retarded, so let us change. And their power is in the Constitution, Article 1. Power belongs to the people, and they will exercise that power through elections and referenda, using their constitutional power. Here in Uganda, we are saying, let us change this leadership, which has been governing for 33 years, and we no longer have positive results, but negative results.
George Wilson Kanyemba is a Ugandan retired Supreme Court judge. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Mpuga from Kampala.
Hello, this is James Butty, managing editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest Africa news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. That's Daybreak Africa right here on VOA Africa.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, in the aftermath of the violent stay-away protest that rocked Zimbabwe a few weeks ago, the Zimbabwean Human Rights Commission released a report that found government liable for some abuses that were reported. The government, however, feels the commission is unfair. For VOA's Vainavasha reports from the Zimbabwean capital, Harare.
Sheila Hilary Matindike is a commissioner with the Zimbabwe Human Rights Commission. She outlined its findings regarding events that took place between January 16th and the 21st.
Interaction with human rights lawyers representing the accused persons revealed that the accused persons had been held for periods exceeding 48 hours and that juveniles were being mixed with the adults in holding cells against international human rights law and standards.
Some of the violations include assaults of civilians by the police and the military, use of live ammunition against protesters, arrest without investigations carried out by officers who refused to identify themselves. Matindike adds that the police officers were not forthcoming with information during the inquiry. She adds that the Commission's limited resources meant it could only visit affected areas in and around Harare and Bulawayo. She says the Commission has since deployed teams to other parts of the country. The report also captures the role of protesters in the violence, noting where they barricaded roads, looted shops, and damaged the property. The protests began in the middle of the month after the government more than doubled fuel prices. Angry Zimbabweans, already struggling with rising inflation and shortage of currents and basic goods, took part in a nationwide 3-day stay-away strike. The government, however, says the report is prejudiced. Ziyambe Ziyambi is the Justice, Legal and Parliamentary Affairs Minister.
The Zimbabwe Human Rights Commission is a constitutional commission put in place to strengthen our democracy. There is therefore an expectation that they would be impartial and speak without bias. Their report falls short of that standard, as it is based not on thorough investigation and only covers the period after the first two most anarchic days of the disturbances.
Ziyambi explains government's expectations.
Government expects our constitutional commissions not to be polarized by making broad and unsubstantiated accusations without caveats or evidence. In the interest of fairness and justice, government will engage with the Zimbabwe Human Rights Commission in order to map the way forward for the benefit of the people of Zimbabwe.
Ziyambi says government will leave no stone unturned as it investigates allegations of misconduct by security forces. There are scores of reports of unidentified men breaking into homes, grabbing people suspected of having taken part in the protests, and beating and detaining them. Victims have told many journalists the attackers did not identify themselves. Government has said there are people impersonating its police and military personnel and victimizing people. The army has called on the public to report any cases of military brutality. Despite the government's disapproval, the commission's report notes opposition members have been attacked and jailed along with civil society leaders. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
Ras Chikomeni Cherwa, an independent presidential candidate, says Malawians face challenges due to the poor leadership qualities the country produces. His comments came after picking up nomination forms to officially begin the process to contest in the upcoming May elections. Cherwa, who is a Nyabingi elder, says he plans to implement measures to jumpstart the economy and create jobs for the youth. He also says he plans an agricultural transformation mechanism, including the industrialization of Indian hemp, as part of his policies to help combat poverty in the southern African country. For more on his policies, I reach independent presidential candidate Ras Chikomeni Cherwa in the Malawian capital, Lilongwe.
First of all, Malawians need to know themselves. We have been enslaved for 400 years. We have been colonized for 73 years. We have been independent for 55 years, but we are not yet liberated. What I want Malawians to know and to do and to be thinking is that they must be liberated in their minds. They must know who they are, and their problems cannot be solved by dollars or donations from outside. We have our problems and we have solutions right here. We need to solve our own problems. So first of all is to devolve the powers of the president. We need also to reduce the powers of the president in choosing or appointing ACB director, Anti-Corruption Bureau, because him is the protector of the public. So first of all is to separate the executive and the legislature and the judiciary. This is separate status, functions and duties. Parties must not be involved in executive arm of government.
But how do you create jobs for the youth? How do you resolve the economic challenges that Malawians face every day?
I have four areas which I will tackle. Firstly, it's agriculture, because agriculture is the backbone of Malawi's economy. We have been cultivating cotton and tobacco and all these crops, but we are not getting enough money. So we need to diversify it. I want to introduce industrial hemp, which is already in the parliament. What is remaining is the passing of the bill. So me being a president, I'll unlock the burden people have manufacturing industries for fiber from hemp, like shampoo, soap making, even medicine. We need to have materials, especially for construction, industrial, coming from this hemp, which is very, very versatile, and it's very particular crop, which a lot of countries protect.
Some people are saying you are not a serious candidate and that all you want is attention. And because you think Rastafarians in Malawi are being marginalized, that's why you are running, and that you are just only providing comic relief. You are not serious. How do you react to that?
I'm not them. I am Rasta Chikomeni Chira. They don't know where I'm coming from. I've studied a lot, and I've done a lot to argue about the discriminatory and exorbitant nomination fee. And Malawi Electoral Commission can attest to this. That because human rights are not things to buy. We are humans. We need to be free. You cannot buy a public office. That is corruption. So accountability and transparency are the ones which we stand on when we are running economic issues. Our governments are corrupt. What can I do? Should I just say it like this? That's why I thought it wise that I must do something. It's not wise to be criticizing without giving solutions. That's why I'm giving solutions which to them are not solutions. What do they want me to do to be serious? Should I undress? That's like Isaiah on Isaiah 20.
You talked about the commercialization of Indian hemp. Some people are saying that shows you are not serious. How are you going to sell this? How beneficial will it be to the people of Malawi? And how will that put food on the table for them? They said you are just becoming like the same politicians. You criticize them of making empty promises and are incapable of implementing them once they give them the power. Your response to that?
I've told you that industrial hemp is being researched at the research station. I've been there by Envy Grow Limited. Because the government in 2013, Malawi government, gave Envy Grow Limited a license to process and to research the viability of hemp. Because I've told you that cotton and tobacco industries are going down. They're not benefiting Malawians. But I know I trade ganja myself in the ghetto. I know hemp is a solution. And this hemp can also be industrialized to absorb the students which are coming from our universities. That's why they have even supported me so much. They have voted groups. So election is a matter of choosing. People are free to believe whatever they can believe, whether it's bizarre, illogical, and irrational. But that doesn't mean that it's not a religion. I'm a Rastafarian. We have never been ruled by a Rastafarian in Malawi. People know that a Rastafarian is a peaceful man. I don't kill. I don't eat flesh. My hands are free. I clean. All those who are comparing me with, they're not like me. I was not voting since 1993, 1994. But I've seen that the freedom which I was fighting for, I'm not eating the fruits of it. Like education. Education is a large tree, which a lot of branches. How can we support it? By opening jobs. The job market will be opened by this industrial hemp. That's why I've told you that it is already in the parliament. But it lacks seriousness, because he who feels it knows it. I feel the hemp. I've grown it. I've sold it for over 20 years.
Ras Chikomeni Chirwa is an independent Malawian presidential candidate. He spoke with me from Lilongwe. And right now it's time for music from African Collection. Coming your way first is Oliver Mtunkudzi, who just passed away. He comes your way with Indima Ndapedza, followed by Sanaipe Tande with Rastaman, Java with Utando, and then we end with Rhoda Nkwetaga. Thank you.
takura ndapedza. Zvasarire mikufuga nekuwarira.
wadi ana entertain that one. Na yule wada go atakupigisha makono. Yule wakahawa atakuacha sawa akikudanganya kila hour. You're his only lover. Na yule wa majay always on the day. Na yule wa ruai always I and I. He'll never give you time. Don't you see the signs? But it's all a lie. My rest of man would never break my heart.
Pindung bon yang tati tembalam. emhlabeni ngabathanda bonke kodwa ungathe mina yedwa noma umthanda umuntu thanda ubuye lenganene ngoba umuntu akuyena owakini umuntu okujikele mini thatha kimi le ndlela ngiyayazi mina ngihambile isothandweni lawo nendaba ugcine limele vula amehlo vala inhliziyo semhlabeni lanagcweli lingo ye hambe kwase kwashoni langamama funana nothando lwangempela engibatholayo badlala ngambadlala ngothando lwame ngisize ngisize ube impendulo yami ngoba uthando lungehlule thando lungehlule mama
Your love is a bomb. You make me surrender. Won't put in panic. So tell me tonight. What's on your soul, mutima? Don't tell me about it. I call you my baby. Oh, see me, I'm a soul. I can see all these other guys. Night and day, baby, toluwa. Zen kulinda tenobula. In a dance all face, you're my everything. Everything. Come so good, we chilo. On bed and tight. Quetaga. Switch and take a gobula mu kwetaga yegwa ndogo tanya osuza ngomula lu omukwano kunsi wagebwa baby rachineda wewe kanjagala kuona woto banze tebinyumira back it up killer them the rhythm let's feed this song not copycat I have us man them wanna get a piece of me bambi lawyer member omeze na malala Njogeza kwa musama E alithin mabangeze na matama Baby, meze na malala In a di dance all face You're my everything, everything Kam sobu dewe chilo Ombera tight Kwetaga 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 Ye kwe permanent switch And take a global amu Your love is a bomb. You make me surrender. Won't put in panic. So tell me tonight. What's on your soul, mutima? Don't tell me about it. I call you my baby. Oh, see me, I'm a soul. I can see all these other guys. Night and day, baby, toluwa. Zen kulinda tenobula. In a dance all face, you're my everything. Everything. So would they watch it all on bed and tight Quetaga 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 Yeah, we permanent switch and take a global amu Quetaga Yeah, when you go tanya on Susan Gomulalu
So you won't take charge, okay? Girl, I no mind. Go do your thing, girl, I'll be quiet, yeah. I know lie. Baby, when I say it's your time, you say make her hold tight. Now she says she won't give me that.
She give me African waist like T.Y.
And we end with Control by Malik Berry. That was Music from the Continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of The Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Saleh, reporter Douglas Mpuga, producer Saida Hamdoun, and our engineer for today, the ever-friendly Nashwan Kale, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, two bulls fighting must disengage their heads before one is defeated. I'm your host, Peter Clotter in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
This is VOA News. I'm Gene Randall.